the end of last week. We have been dealing with a little bit of the halachas of wearing a yarmulke on one's head, wearing a kippah. Try to finish that up then, hopefully get into some other things as well. We'll start off some more of the Ashkamas Abokir. The next issue doesn't actually come up in the Shulchan Aruch per se, but it is a discussion amongst the poskim, and certainly worthwhile to hear about. Believe it or not, there actually is a discussion amongst the poskim about a proper size for a yarmulke. Is there such a thing as a proper size for a yarmulke? The study thing is too small, too big, etc. And over here we actually have a machlokas amongst some of the greater names in the poskim. Like I said before, it's kedai to hear what they have to say. There is a tshuva in a sefer called the Ha'elef Lecha Shlomo, written by one of the great poskim from back about 200 or so years ago, named Shlomo Kluger. Shlomo Kluger was a very major name in the world of Psak Halacha. And that's a tshuva that's found in Simon Gimel towards the beginning of the beginning section of the Ha'elef Lecha Shlomo, the name of a sefer taken out of a pasuk in Shir HaShirim. Shlomo Kluger writes there as follows. He says, listen, Chazal tell us that the rule is a person has to keep his head covered. The head has to be covered. How much has to be covered over of the head? What qualifies as no longer being an uncovered head? And so Shlomo Kluger argues that as long as a person had rove of his head covered by his yarmulke, then his head, right, the cheftza of a head, if you will, is actually considered covered. You don't have to have all of your head covered, but you have to have rove. Rove is always kekulo. That was the argument of Rav Shlomo Kluger. The truth of the matter is the Chazon Ish is quoted as having had a similar shita as well. And that's part of the reason why, if you ever see a picture of older European, Lithuanian, Rabbanim, or even Stamma Jews, certainly if you see a picture of the Chazon Ish himself, they wore these big, massive yarmulkes on top of their head, a slightly different shape than the way we're used to right now. But that was in deference to the idea that most of the head was meant to be a kept covered. There is a tshuva, though, by Rav Moshe Feinstein, the Igros Moshe, happens to be famous because the very first tshuva in the entire Igros Moshe, the Chelek Aleph of Aruch Chaim, Simon Aleph, there's a similar tshuva in the Chavad Das by Rabbi Avadji Yosef as well, where they both argue a slightly different argument. They say, no, they feel that that's the idea that Shlomo Kluger had, that the yarmulke has to cover the majority of a person's head, is not necessarily correct. They argue like this, the Chazal tell us that a person is not allowed to walk Arba Amos Begilui Arosh. You can't have your head uncovered. And Moshe argues in a very interesting light. He says, the Chazal don't say that your head has to be covered. They tell you that your head is not allowed to be uncovered. So argues Rav Moshe the following thing, from the Nusay Diyuk in the language, the syntax of Chazal. Argues Rav Moshe Feinstein, as long as you can have something up big enough sitting on top of your head, that you're not going to say that the head is kept uncovered, I'll explain what that means in a second, then you don't say that particular halacha. Rav Moshe argues like this. As long as the yarmulke is visible on a person's head, it's big enough that people can see it, it's big enough that it can be seen from the various angles that you're looking at, even if it's not covering the majority of your head, but it's clear that there's something there. It's clear that your head is not left totally bald, totally uncovered. And therefore Moshe argues that the yarmulke can be significantly smaller than some of the earlier poskim had to actually held. Again, not necessarily the majority of the rove of the head, as long as it's visible. It happens to be, perhaps much to our chagrin, that there is no more lenient shita, though, than that of Rav Moshe. In other words, if you look through the poskim, if you try to figure out and do a study of different shitas about yarmulke sizes, it seems that Rav Moshe was, in fact, the most lenient out of those opinions. In other words, a yarmulke basically does have to try to be big enough that if someone's going to be staring at your head, they actually notice that the head is going to be covered by something. Sometimes, especially when our girlfriends are a little bit on the skimpy side and don't appreciate us all that much, and they knit us a very, very small little yarmulke, just small enough to get our nickname along the edge or something like that, then it might not be necessarily visible when a person's staring at the thing. Or, if we have a lot of hair on our head, okay, whatever the reason is, let's say a person would have a lot of hair on his head, and he had a yarmulke that's perhaps a little bit size challenged over there. So then, that might not necessarily be an actual fulfillment of the halach of trying to not walk with a gilui arosh. It should be big enough to be sported, to be proud of, and show off who we are. People should be able to see it from wherever it is that they're looking. Once, years ago, I had the fortune of traveling. I like to travel a lot, but in general, but happened to be in Paris a number of years ago. And I was there with a friend who was wearing a knitted yarmulke with his name on the front of the yarmulke. It used to be a little bit more in style than it is today. And we were in a store somewhere in Paris. I don't remember exactly which neighborhood. And that's a clothing store. and check out the famous Paris fashions. And the person who was, the owner of the store had come over, had a little bit of a funny personality, sticks out of my mind, we want to mimic him right now, but walked over, I guess they didn't really know what Jews were for some reason, it wasn't so popular, back in the day of Jews walking around in the street with the armagers on, but thought this idea of having a nice little like pink, blue, green, whatever the color was with your name on your head, he thought it was such a cool in kind of a thing, and he promised, oh, I'm gonna popular, this is a great idea, let everyone walk around with their name on their head, and like that. So the truth is, it never made it big wearing yarmulkes. Baruch Hashem, the Jews and Klai Yisrael are still slightly different, a group of people, I'm Levadad Yishkon, and but Afal Pikin, we still should be proud to be sporting the yarmulkes on our head, whether it's a fashion statement or not, but it certainly should be visible, like the sheet of promotion. Keep that in mind, certainly when you're buying the yarmulke as well. Next thing we want to try to speak about a yarmulke, a little bit of a machlokas, hopefully it's not so negaya to most of us sitting around this room or anywhere at your age. The Mishabura quotes a discussion, Sifka and Yud Beis over here, whether or not the toupee that a person would be wearing on their head, a hairpiece, they're going bald and stick something on their head to try to look a little bit young, and like they have a full head of hair, does that count as covering your hair or not? Like we mentioned a second ago, there is a machlokas amongst the poskim whether or not that counts. The standard accepted psak halacha, Rav Moshe writes like this as well, it comes earlier back from his Dechemet, is that we try to be machmir that a toupee should not count as covering your head unless there's some incredible shas hadchak. There should be something for maris ayin reasons. We want it to look like people actually have a yarmulke on their head. And if and ever that becomes nogei lamaisa, keep that in mind, that we try to keep a yarmulke even on top of the toupee. Last but not least, in terms of the halachas of a yarmulke, and Mishnah Berurah quotes also in Sifka and Yud Beis over here, a discussion amongst the various poskim about the permissibility of covering your head with your hand. Say a person doesn't have a yarmulke on for whatever reason. They want to put their hand over their head to count as the covering of their head. Does that work or not? But most of you probably are under the assumption that doesn't work. You can't cover your head with your hand. You have to put a yarmulke on. The truth of the matter is, it's not so simple as we're about to explain. The psak given by the Mishnah Berurah is as follows. If a person is outside, mamish, and the outside, under the open sky, without a roof on their head, then Ena Chanaim, we try to be machmir, like those sheetahs that say, covering your head with your hand is not really going to work. Right? Now, that's still called a gilui rosh, whatever the reasons are. If, on the other hand, the person is inside a roofed area, inside a house, inside a room, a caravan, whatever it is, where, like we mentioned, this was last week, the sheet of the Rashba, there is a concept that anywhere inside a roof is considered one big Dalet Amos. And since Meikir Adin, the halacha was that you can't walk Dalet Amos without a yarmulke. But if the argument is true that anywhere inside a covered area is considered one big Dalet Amos, the Mishnah Berurah says as follows. We're allowed to rely on a lenient opinion and cover our head with our hand if there's no yarmulke easily available, provided that we're under a roof and provided that we're going to be inside. For example, Mishnah Berurah quotes over here, say a person wakes up in the middle of the night, and they're hot, and they're very, very thirsty, getting dehydrated, they need a drink of water. And they look around, they can't find the yarmulke, it fell off their head, and they're really just too tired to get up and make a whole production about trying to locate where exactly the yarmulke went. They want to get back to bed and go to sleep, but they want to take a drink of water and make a shahakos. So Mishnah Berurah brings down, a person has a right to put his hand over his head, make the bracha, and to take his drink, and then lay back down in bed. You're not mechuyev to be matriach overly much when you're inside. The same thing is true. A yarmulke falls off and you want to go and get it like that, and it's within more than dagramas, put your hand over your head and go try to pick up these things. The Mishnah Berurah points out, if you can put a sleeve over your hand, that certainly would be better, that there should be some kind of a garment covering your head. But like we said before, me'ikar adin, a hand would work if the person's inside a roofed area, and we have a right to be maker like that opinion. That's going to cover the end of our halachas about a yarmulke, but we have a couple more things I want to try to do in the next 5 minutes this morning, because we want to try to keep the pace over here as rapid as possible. We're going to be skipping over Simon Gimel for right now. Those are the halachas of Hanhagas, Beis Akisei, how a person is supposed to act and behave in the bathroom. The simple reason why we're skipping over the halacha is that they're actually very, very detailed, a little bit difficult to be mekayim to give over in a public fashion, certainly for certain tznius and just lishon nikiyah issues as well. We'll cover them over. I'm not implying, let me just say this clear, I'm not implying that the halachas of how exactly one is supposed to handle themselves in a bathroom are not nogeya anymore, halacha l'maisa, they certainly are. We should try to read through them. Just for simplicity's sake, we're going to be skipping over them for right now and moving into Simin Dalid, which discusses the halachas of Netilas Yadayim in the morning, the halachas of washing the Negavas. And the truth is, these are actually a little bit complicated halachas over here as well. And that's what we're going to try to spend an appropriate amount of time this week getting through those halachas and Mir Tashem some more as well. Mechaber brings down halacha, when a person wakes up in the morning, he's chayiv to wash his hands and make a bracha of Al Netilas Yadayim. That's a psak given there by the Shulchan Aruch. Relatively straightforward. Mechaber brings down as well that that Me'ikar Adin, we don't necessarily follow all of the same halachos that we require when it comes to washing our hands for eating bread, etc., with a cup and with different kinds of kosher waters, etc. We'll describe a little bit later. Although, as we'll see, as we go on, we try to be makbid to be using a cup as well. But the Ikar halacha is that the person should be washing his hands, washing in water in the morning when he wakes up. Why is that important to be washing your hands when a person is waking up in the morning? So there's three different ideas that get brought down amongst the in the Shulchan Aruch and the Poskim and Rishonim that govern the halachas of washing in the morning. All of them extremely relevant to the details of the halacha. And Shavuot points out two of the main opinions over here, that of the Rosh and the Rashba. The Rosh's opinion was that a person has to wash his hands in the morning and clean his hand in the morning for the simple reason that overnight when a person is laying in bed, it's assumed that the person is rolling and twisting and turning, and his hands are going to end up touching parts of his body that are dirty, that are sweaty, etc., not so clean. Since a person has to be davening after he wakes up in the morning with clean hands, and the assumption is that the hands probably got a little bit dirtied overnight, a person has to wash his hands again for cleanliness purposes to make sure that the hands are crystal clean in order to be able to daven properly. The truth is that the Rosh holds that that's true by all of the tefillos throughout the day. For mincha, for ma'ir, you have to wash your hands to make sure that your hands are clean before the person comes and davens. The Rashba is quoted by the Beis Yosef as arguing a very, very different idea. And the Rashba says that we're dealing with something a little bit more dramatic, a little bit more inspirational, and perhaps philosophical as well. Says the Rashba, a person wakes up in the morning, he's a Bria Chadasha. He's a brand new creation, just created right now by Kadosh Baruch Hu himself. A person has to be Makir Tov, has to thank the Ribono Shel Olam for waking him up in the morning. Rabbi Munasecha, like we mentioned the other day, how faithful HaKadosh Baruch Hu is to put us back in this world every single day. And because the person has this incredible responsibility to thank and be appreciative of his life that HaKadosh Baruch Hu just gave him, the Rashba explains that Chazal made a special takana in the morning. What's the takana? When a person wakes himself up, he wants to try to sanctify himself as much as he can, to try to elevate himself, make a statement to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yeah, if I'm alive today and you gave me the gift of life, I want to try to use it properly on an elevated kind of a fashion. Since the Rashba says we know that when Kohanim would come into the Beis HaMikdash, they would wash Netilas Yadayim V'Raglayim from the Kiyor, from one of the vessels in the Beis HaMikdash, to symbolize their new day of Avoda. We do a similar thing as well. When you wake up to express that appreciation that we just mentioned, the person is supposed to try to wash himself to dedicate his day to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore we wash again as soon as we wake up in the morning to symbolize that appreciation and that Kedusha that the person wants to add it to his life. Now obviously that's a very, very different idea than the Rosh had just mentioned. According to the Rashba, that doesn't apply before Mincha, doesn't apply before Ma'ariv. That's something special and unique that applies specifically immediately upon waking up in the morning. And as we go on, we'll see some of the various nafkaminis between the Shitas of the Rosh and the Rashba. The Mechaber himself, quote, alludes to an idea not totally explained, that there's a third, perhaps more mystical reason that's offered for the idea of washing Netilas Yadayim as well, rooted in a Gemara, but the exact concept is a little bit difficult to put your fingers on, no pun intended. And the Mechaber brings down, there's a concept called a Ruach Ra, an evil spirit that rests on a person's fingers when he wakes up in the morning. Now again, not clear what makes that ruach ra be there on your fingers. Is it the fact that you slept for so long at night? The fact that at nighttime there's a lot of heebie-jeebies and ghosts and who knows whatever else floating around at night? It's a scary time. Perhaps the nighttime causes the ruach ra to be resting around on the hands. Not so clear. And the truth is not incredibly relevant to us right now either. But be that as it may, there's now what we're going to call a more mystical idea of trying to combat and remove that ruach ra from the hands as well. And we'll see him here to Hashem tomorrow, how that governs some of the halachas of the Netilas Yadayim. But for right now, we're going to call it over here. Have a great day. We'll pick up tomorrow, Mir to Hashem.